response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're going to look into the case of Nolan Wells, an 18-year-old black college athlete whose body was recovered from the waters near Horn Island days after he vanished on July 4th. Was his death an accident? A racially motivated crime? There are several theories out there, and Scoot out of Odyssey station WWL in New Orleans covered them extensively this week. We'll also hear about yet another deadly incident involving ICE agents, this time in Houston, Texas. To end the show, we'll hear discussions of laws that impact violent criminals and national crime statistics. Now on to the big mystery of our show this week. What exactly happened to Nolan Wells, the 18-year-old young man who was found dead in the waters around Horn Island, Mississippi, after July 4th celebrations? Scoot from Odyssey station WWL has been following the story. He'll fill us in on the details.
So we've been talking about the case of the 18-year-old who died on Horn Island. So I'm getting some really interesting text, and I don't know really what happened. All I know is what I'm hearing in the news. I'm trying to put it together and share it with you so it makes sense. But I love the information that I'm getting. And so there is one train of thought that there was some kind of problem, and he ended up dead. And then they brought his body back to Horn Island. The thing that doesn't make sense about that is the idea that he wanted to be on Horn Island to maybe kind of hang out with this girl and talk to this girl. And you know, if you're a guy and you're straight, friends with your guy friends, that's one thing. But if you get a chance to knack on a girl, if you get a chance to, you know, flirt with a girl because you got a crush on her, that supersedes your male friends. Hey, you guys can go. I'll get a ride back with her. I'm gonna hang out with her. But that doesn't explain what happened and how he ended up dead. And I guess the other thing that I'm concerned about with Nolan Wells is he died July 4th. His body wasn't found until July 6th. It seems like he was always in somebody's company. It doesn't seem like he was ever alone. So somebody had to see what happened. And if the person who saw something happen was involved in any way, they're not going to come forward. But doesn't it sound like he was never really alone? But yet it seemed like he ended up alone and dead in the water. But they have not said yet that he died from drowning. So as far as I know, we don't yet know how he drowned, or I mean how he died, whether it was drowning or something else. I don't think we know that yet. But I mean, it only takes so long to do the autopsy and to send the evidence off and then to get it back. It only takes so long. So we should know something soon about the cause of death. I mean, that would be an obvious thing. An autopsy's been done. What's the cause of death? That's what we need to know. That's going to tell us a hell of a lot. If he drowned, okay, how did he drown? And who was there when he drowned? Or did he just go off on his own? And why was he off on his own if he did not have a way back to the mainland from the island? I mean, if you didn't have a boat ride back to the coast from the island, you wouldn't want to be alone. So it seems like he had to always be with somebody. Or was he killed in some other way? Or did he die in some freak accident? and ended up in the water? Again, these are just questions. We don't know. But it should not take long to get the autopsy results back. And then we'll know a lot how he died.
One caller dialed into Scoot's show to explain why some people are concerned that Wells may have been the victim of a racially motivated crime, and why some people are frustrated at the way his case has been represented.
I fully believe that if the situation were to be reversed, those boys would have been arrested immediately, and no bond and no high-priced lawyer would have saved them.
Yeah, that is very possible.
Okay.
That's probable.
Now, I don't just... That's fine.
And I appreciate
you
calling.
You may not recognize my name, but I'm the mother of a murdered child.
I don't
Boogie B's mother.
Okay. So
the comedian that was killed in Ralph's parking lot was my son.
Yeah. I am.
Okay. So this whole situation has me triggered.
I understand.
And what I am tired of is people, not you, let's be clear, not you, but there are voices out there who are making it seem like this whole, the way that it's being handled is normal and reasonable, and it is not. I think if, and it's my personal opinion, no proof, but I think if one of those mothers wasn't a judge, it wouldn't be going down this way.
You know, it doesn't look good. I understand the point you're making, Geraldine. And look, I cannot relate to your perspective on life, because you had a son taken from you. So I'm not even going to pass judgment on your opinion. I can't see life the way you do because of what you've been through. And I'm sorry that you went through that. And I do think you bring up a legitimate point about what if the situation had been turned around. And just bringing that up causes us to address that issue that is not fair.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the week continued, Scoot continued to look into the case.
I wrote a blog about this. It should be posted on our website, wwl.com. It should also be posted on Scoot on the Air Facebook, and you can comment on it there, and I'll try to get to some of your comments later. But I want to share the latest. If you missed our show late yesterday, I just kind of put it all together, and there are still a lot of questions and a lot of rumors and a lot of conspiracy theories. So, you know, if you know any, if you have heard anything, I mean, sometimes conspiracy theories really lead to the truth, because sometimes the way the facts are presented are not exactly the way that it really happened. Even with the controversy, the death of this 18-year-old Nolan Wells is a heartbreaking tragedy. But the truth about what happened is important for a number of reasons. From the beginning of this sad news that a teenager ready to enter Southwest Louisiana Mississippi Community College, he died on Horn Island in the Mississippi Sound. From the beginning of this, you know, this was a high-profile case, but I didn't understand why civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump was involved. The story of the death of this 18-year-old exploded into a national news story, with Crump and the parents of Nolan Wells appearing on all the national network news shows. Now, my initial suspicion about Crump's involvement was not to discount racism, but it was really about not understanding why racism was part of this, because nothing that I heard just jumped out at me as being racist. You know, the fact that the teen who died was black and his friends were white, that should not automatically cause people to think about racism. So for a young generation, I mean, and think about this, and I know you see this if you have kids or grandkids. For young generations, the friendships between the races are seamless compared to the unfortunate judgment that still lives among the boomer generation. But there is a link But if there is a link between the teen's death and racism, then I think we need to know. Nolan Wells was apparently on this last big party escape before reporting to football camp at the community college that he was going to be attending. Nolan was with friends, and together they traveled to Horn Island in the Mississippi Sound. Horn Island is uninhabited, and here's what you need to know about the island. It's a barrier island off the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and depending on your departure point, whether it's Biloxi, Gulfport, or Ocean Springs, and the speed of your boat and the water conditions, the island is a 20-minute to an hour boat ride from the coast. Horn Island is uninhabited, like I say. Ship Island has this, you know, massive convenience store and shops. I haven't been to Ship Island in a while, but that's the last I remember. But Horn Island is essentially uninhabited, and it does lack that large concession area that is on nearby Ship Island. There are also no phones, and there's no phone service on Horn Island. The island is a desirable destination by boat because the water on the southern shore of Horn Island, the other side of Horn Island, is clear compared to the water of the Mississippi Sound. It's kind of like Gulf Shores. Maybe not quite that clear, but when you get on the other side of Ship Island, the other side of Cat Island, the other side of Horn Island, the water's really nice. And so a lot of people with boats, they will go to Horn Island or Ship Island and recreate. So Nolan Wells and his friends ventured to Horn Island for recreation. At some point, Wells separated from his friends with the understanding that he would get a ride in a boat back to the Mississippi coast with someone else. Away from the group of friends, Wells disappeared on July 4th, and his body was discovered in the water at the northwest corner of Horn Island on July the 6th, 2 days later. Apparently, his friends had possession of his cell phone, which is quite curious. Mississippi authorities said that there were pictures of the teens drinking beer, but there was no indication that Nolan's blood alcohol had reached the level of intoxication. Authorities also said that there were no signs of a crime being committed. Social media activity has been downloaded. It's being processed right now to try to corroborate some of the information that is available. Now, the mother of one of the teens, one of the white teens with Nolan before he broke away from the group, Jackson County Judge Ashley Cole, she has reported death threats against her and her family.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
And she says that just like everybody else, they want to find out what happened to this young man. Now, while talking about this latest information on the show yesterday, I got a text from someone who said there's suspicion because the mother, who's a judge, was interfering in the case, which suggests some kind of cover-up, perhaps, some kind of manipulation of the facts. If that's true, I have not found any real credible evidence that there was interference or a cover-up. But that leads to even more questions. Why did Nolan Wells break away from his group of friends? Who was he going to get a ride back with? I mean, you know, you're on Horn Island and you don't have a boat and you break away from your friends who have a boat. Are you sure you're going to be able to get a ride back? And who are you going to get a ride with? Was there any argument or altercation? Did the other teens have Nolan's cell phone? You know, there are still a lot of questions which, you know, need to be answered. And look, you know, parents can order an independent investigation if they think something is wrong. And there is an investigation going on. And Attorney Benjamin Crump, I guess, is part of that. Is he spearheading the investigation or the parents? I'm not sure. And what are the theories that point to racism being a factor in the death of Nolan Wells? I'm not saying racism isn't part of it, but what are the facts that lead people in that direction? Now, I understand that parents, you know, want their kids to always do what they tell them to do. But the truth is, a lot of teenagers, especially older teens like 18 years old, they don't always do what their parents tell them to do. But the tragic death of Nolan Wells on Horn Island does yield more questions than answers. Appearing on ABC's Good Morning America, Nolan's father, Elmore Wansley, said, "We always taught him, if you go with a group, you stay with a group. If you go with five, you come back with five. Do not separate from the group because, I always said, there's safety in numbers." So he knew to stay with the group. So why would he split from the group? I don't know. Christine Wansley, the mother, said that she could not imagine her son leaving the group and being alone. So what happened here? I mean, I know our kids don't always do exactly what we think they're going to do. As much as we hope that our kids will listen to us, the truth is they don't always listen to us. Or something comes up that is more enticing. Everything that happened is not the result of racism. Everything that happens in general is not the result of racism. However, racism could be a factor, and we could learn about that. I think it would be sad if racism is part of this. But if it is, I think we need to know and maybe try to learn from it. In the case of Nolan Wells' death, it's important to know if racism was a factor. Was it some kind of motivation? Was there a cover-up? If you know anything, if you have heard or read anything, you know, even on social media, I'll entertain that. So I think the parents have every right to their independent investigation and to hire Benjamin Crump. I hope this isn't about racism, but no matter what, an 18-year-old teen is dead. And that is tragic. That is heartbreaking. So it's not like it's going to be some kind of relief if we discover that it was racism. I mean, it's still a tragedy. But if the issue is about race, then that's really sad because things don't have to be about race. We make things about race, and there shouldn't be anything about race. I'm really interested to see what results come, because I hope there's nothing that involves racism, but that's not going to give me a sigh of relief because an 18-year-old is still dead. So, you know, we don't know what happened here. But if you have read or heard anything that I haven't heard or read, and you want to share that with us, all right, well, let's see if anybody has read or heard anything more about the case, because, again, missing July 4th, body found in the water July 6th, he leaves his friends, they might have his cell phone. I don't know, man, there are a lot of questions here. I still don't see the connection with racism, but I'm not saying it doesn't exist. We've been talking about a number of things. The latest on the Nolan Wells case, they went to the family went and had a meeting along with Benjamin Crump, their attorney, had a meeting with the DA in Jackson County, Mississippi, and everybody seemed happy with the meeting. I still have a question about why Jackson County hasn't released more information about the cause of death, even if it's preliminary information. That's something that I thought sort of naturally came out. And why, if it is this true, did his friends, the people who left him because he wanted to stay behind? I mean, I don't think it's a case of they just left him. Hey, the hell with you, you know, F you, we're going. No, I think he wanted to stay back on the island to hang out with this girl. So they leave, but if they did scrub their phones, if they did erase all of the activities of the day from their phones, why did they do that? I mean, of course, if they're drinking, they're underage at 18. And whether or not 18-year-olds should be allowed to drink, that's a topic for another show that I'm sure we'll get to. I mean, when I was growing up, you could be 18. You have to be 18 to go in the military, and if you can go fight for our country, are you old enough to drink? Those are legitimate questions, but we're not going to get into that today. So, you know, if they did erase their phones, why did they do that? And it seems like there are some sketchy questions about the death of 18-year-old Nolan Wells. And, you know, we'll do the best we can to keep you in touch with all that is going on.
Dana Wright and Sam Stevie III of the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City discuss the fate of certain violent criminals who have actually served their sentences. Let's listen in.
And then this story that for all 30 years of my career has puzzled me with respect to how it is legal to do what we do. And I'm not saying I disagree with it. I'm just saying I don't understand how it's legal.
Okay.
On the Missouri side, the Attorney General today has moved to permanently commit a repeat sex offender who was one day from release. And we do this all the time, by the way. Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway filed today to civilly commit a repeat sex offender who was one day from release. 42-year-old Benjamin Waltz was scheduled for release this week. He will now remain in custody while the proceedings against him to commit him civilly move forward, okay? The AG notes that the Johnson County Sheriff's Office referred Waltz to her office for review after his probation was revoked following a recent arrest. And here we go. He, despite a long criminal history of sex offenses, failed to register as a sex offender, number one, was found loitering near a school in the Warrensburg area, number two. Oh, wait for it, allegedly sexually assaulted a woman in the Warrensburg area. Court records show that Sheriff's Office formally notified the AG on April 15th that Waltz had a prior conviction for a sexually violent offense and had committed recent overt acts on top of his original conviction. Under Missouri law, as any act that creates a reasonable apprehension of harm of a sexually violent nature, you are able to commit these men and women, although I think it's predominantly men. In 2002, he was convicted of sexual battery in Florida. In 2011, convicted of felonious kidnapping. 2020, convicted of second-degree sexual abuse. And 2024, violated numerous sex offender registration requirements.
Because they're proving to be an ongoing threat. That's
absolutely.
Obviously not going to get the picture
absolutely.
Of, hey, you can't be doing this, you weirdo.
In addition to his convictions, the AG office says Walt has multiple arrests for incidents of a sexual nature that either didn't result in charges or for whatever reason, charges were later dismissed. And we all know that doesn't mean he didn't do it. It just means procedurally, there are a slew of other cases that did not see their way all the way through court. Okay.
Right.
So what happens now? They do this mental health evaluation under our laws. And I think it's in Kansas and Missouri. They go to Larned. I'd have to look this up.
I do believe so.
You
yeah.
can continue to keep someone that we believe is an ongoing threat only in these sexually violent cases.
Good.
And I'm not saying I don't want these people locked up. In a million years, you would not want this guy living next to you or your daughter or your granddaughter. He is a repeat sexual deviant offender. I've never understood how this got through the court system, though, that once you have served your sentence, a state can then say, we're going to move you from padded cell A to a mental place B.
Because obviously—
So that you can no longer offend. Because, Sam, people reoffend all the time for a million different crimes.
Well, I mean, does that not deserve some of the same conversation? We talk about the guy along Indian Creek who is accused of killing seven people and has been in and out of the competency investigation for the last, almost 10 years now?
In a perfect world to me, you put these offenders away the first time. God knows the second time. I mean, he had four that I just repeated between 2002 and 2024.
And those were cases that stuck.
You put them away and you throw away the key.
Yeah.
I've never understood how it's legal under our Constitution that once they serve their sentence, as short as that may be, we can then recommit them somewhere else. And again, I am not here to advocate for the release of these nuts. You would not want to be anywhere near one of these men.
Well, in 30, 40 years ago, that wouldn't even have been a thought that you had because that was the common practice. So does the Constitution have anything to do about it? Did it go to a constitutional court back
then? I think it's been through the court, Sam. And for whatever reason, when it comes to a violent sexual predator who cannot seem to stay out of trouble, it is legal to put them away. And again, I am thrilled they are putting them away. I just don't understand under our system of laws how we can do it. Or we should be able to put everyone away that can't. You know what I mean? Like, you can't stop stealing.
I mean, we did that for a while.
He will undergo a full evaluation by the Department of Mental Health, and then a judge will determine whether he should be civilly committed as a sexually violent predator.
I want to key on that one for a second. Why do we need to give him a mental health evaluation? We can look at his actions and pretty well figure out how he's doing upstairs.
Because if you're going to take someone's freedom away after they've served their sentence, I think you have to go through that process.
But the mental health evaluation would be whether or not
he's nuts.
Competent.
He's a sexually deviant.
We know he's not competent.
Well, I don't know if it's competency. It's, is he sexually deviant? And the answer is yes.
Got it.
The answer is most certainly yes.
Tommy Tucker, another host out of WWL in New Orleans, spoke to Ronald Serpas about crime statistics both locally and nationwide in an interview this week.
At this time, there are about 1,400 people in Orleans Parish Prison. A significant, overwhelming majority are in there for serious violent crimes, and they're being held in custody pending the outcome of their trials because they're such serious crimes. I'll agree with that for this reasons on a couple. One, there's only about 1% to 2% of your city that ever wants to get involved in serious violent crime. That's a fact. We know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. So if they're held because they are serious offenders, that's good. Two, let's look back, step back, Tommy, since COVID. The one thing that we need to say, and this isn't meant to start any fights with anybody, but murders and violent crime is going down across the country. It's going down in red states. It's going down in blue states, big cities, small cities, urban cities. Cities that had National Guard and federal government enforcement activity and support, and cities that different. That lends us to have more idea that this isn't really one mayor's great job or one police chief's great job. There's something in the system that's changing. There's something that's coming up in the numbers of people who are willing to commit crimes. The second thing, and I've always been very focused on this, when the police officers are allowed to be deployed and used in proactive policing, which is the only scientifically proven form of policing that works, and they give better cases to prosecutors because they're doing that kind of directed proactive policing, prosecutors have stronger cases, people may be held longer in prison as incapacitated, which could reduce crime. That's where I think some of what I'm saying and Rafi's pointed out kind of come together. I will share this with you. Very few people in your community want to do these types of crimes. And when the police can focus on them and legally and justifiably incapacitate their criminal behavior and prosecutors can work with that, we can see crime go down. The question is the police department being proactive? I believe Kirkpatrick, Chief Kirkpatrick, when she says they are. I think the data starts to support that. But really, it's going on all over the country, so it's a little early for any one plan to say that was the most successful. But going down around the country is a good thing.
So what systemically could have changed around the country, specifically after COVID?
Yeah, there's certainly some people in the criminology world who think that COVID was such a disruptor that it's now taken the nation a few years to kind of come back to a status quo. I don't think that's necessarily wrong. My experience in policing continues to be the same. A very small number of people want to commit crimes. That's who we should focus on.
Well, what does that mean, disruptor, as far as gang activity or as far as the criminal activity?
Everything. This is what some criminologists think, that COVID was such a dramatic change to the way we live our lives, that some of these things got out of control and out of whack. And now we're starting to kind of come back. That's what they said. I'm not really sure I get a lot of that. I think we're back to normal life after COVID. I'll accept that. I think that better deployed police, even though if they're short-staffed, are doing those kinds of cases, they can make a huge difference. If they're bringing good cases to prosecutors with good witness participation, they can get dangerous people off the community, i.e., there's only so many really dangerous people. That's what I think is probably going on here. I also think, Tommy, we all know this in the academic world right now. It's called the birth cohort cliff, and that means that right now we have the lowest number of 18-year-olds as a number of people, and they are at a small birth rate because after the 2008 recession, people started slowing birth rates. So think about that. The crime-prone age is 18 to 24. Mm-hmm. If we have less 18 to 24-year-old people like we did in the early 2000s, that could also be contributing to that very small number of people who want to commit crime. See the point?
Sure.
So there's a lot of things that are moving in the same direction at this moment in time. I think in my 47-year career, we've seen this happen a couple other times in the last four decades that could have been attributed to some of the same things we're talking about today. Less people are being hurt.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WCCO News and Talk in the Twin Cities, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, KRLD 1080 in Dallas, KCBS Radio in the Bay Area, the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, and both Scoot and Tommy Tucker out of WWL in New Orleans. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.